Hello and welcome to One Inch Par Scary Podcast. This is Kirsty Sayer. I'm alone today. I have spent the last two episodes in conversation with my brother Seth Randall. And if you missed those episodes, I highly encourage that you catch up on them because they are gold. Seth is an absolute fount of wisdom, compassion, all the good things. He is a man of great integrity. He has gone to enormous lengths to improve his understanding of himself, to heal himself, and to have relationships which are honest, forthright, and transparent. And in the process, you know, we have healed so much from our childhood in his being willing to work with me and be there for me throughout our lives. It has really just been an enormous blessing to call him my brother and to listen to him and have just, you know, be able to be on this journey with him. So I really hope that you listen because I've had such incredible feedback from so many people, lots of different kinds, you know, that different things resonated with different people, but in really profound and helpful ways, you know, where they saw areas which needed work and healing, and they also felt reassured and joyful in some of the things that he explained. And it was just, these are really good conversations, and I hope you will you'll listen to them at some point. Today, I want to talk about something that I learned this week, which is so, so helpful. It's pretty basic, and it's something that I recognize my therapist had done with me when I was really not that conscious of what she was doing. I was like vaguely conscious, but I didn't have the vocabulary or the words or the understanding as to what kind of was going on. And she might identify it in another way were she to describe or, you know, say what she was doing, or she might even be unconscious of what she's doing because she did it for so long and so expertly and patiently and well. But this week I listened to a podcast by one of my favorites, Allison Faulkner. She puts on what she calls the Allison Show podcast. It's Allison with one L, and she's great. I love her. She's one of those people who feels like your best friend, and then you're like, wait, have we actually ever talked like directly? Am I sure that we have chatted directly? We have had very brief back and forths, but I honestly do feel like she's a close friend. She's one of those people who makes everybody feel that way because she's so authentic. She is so honest and so real about what she's feeling, and she has phenomenal insights. And really, she got somebody named Gabrielle Bernstein on her podcast, which is a real catch because Gabrielle Bernstein is a massively successful New York Times bestselling author, spiritual leader kind of person. She's not necessarily my cup of tea out of the gate. Like, people have recommended her. I've seen her kind of in a lot of like self-help pop culture. And I was like, I don't know. Until this episode, because I don't generally jump on those bandwagons. They kind of leave me cold, which is weird. And I don't know what my damage is, that I just resist things that might be able to help me just because they're super popular or the person seems really glossy or whatever. It is my own hang up, but I know there are other people out there like me. So I'm just saying, I'm telling you all this for your sake so that you don't, that, you know, we all try to work on that because sometimes people do get very popular and they may happen to be pretty or young or dynamic and still have things of incredible wisdom to impart. So all that said, she's on the podcast and I'm listening to them discussing one of the methods that she uses. And she gets this from Abraham Hicks, who's another sort of spiritual self-help guru type person that I also was like, weep, too weird. Nope, skip. I'll find someone else who seems a little more grounded in something else that I'm more comfortable with, you know. Anyway, turns out that this thing is super solid. It is, the way Abraham Hicks refers to it is as vibrational energy, which immediately turns people off. Like, I can see everybody being like, click off of this podcast themselves, a lot of people. I am not immediately turned off by discussions of vibrational energy only because I am a highly empathic person. And I can testify to walking into a room and immediately sensing and physically feeling the energy of the people around me. And it either bringing me up or weighing me down. So that's my personal experience with it. So when people sort of refer to that, it's something that I have physically felt, and it's something that resonates with me. It doesn't mean that we can't translate it into something that resonates with you better. And it's, you know, there's science behind it. There's definitely very, very like well-documented psychology behind this. So whatever resonates with you, I want to talk to you about the scale that Abraham Hicks uses and that both of these women were referring to. And there was an example that that Gabrielle Bernstein actually used in this podcast of helping a little boy who did not get chosen for his baseball team, and how she just helped him in a really like almost a very passive way, actually, just by sitting and listening to him and asking a couple of key questions. She helped him go from a point of absolute despair, or what she would call a very low vibrational energy. Whatever works for you, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what we call these things. Whatever it is, it's like a bad feeling, right? Bad, crappy, unempowered feeling, to moving really quickly to where he kind of bounced back and was able to sort of take back control of his life and not feel so completely down and desperate. And the thing is that it resonated with me because I've had kids and they've been sorely disappointed in this way. And as a mom, we hate that for our kids. As a parent, we hate that. We hate that for our friends. We also hate that for ourselves. And as an individual, I know that I've been in the lowest place that people can be, which is utter despair and zero hope. Okay. So, I know that, you know, there's nothing much beyond, nothing much lower than total despair and no hope. And I know that that kind of emotional frequency, whatever it is, psychologically or, you know, energetically or whatever it is, can lead to suicide, can lead to staying in your bed for months, can lead to all sorts of things that none of us want for ourselves. I think we can all land in agreement on that point. And I know that my therapist worked very patiently and with a lot of control toward allowing me to choose just the next better emotion up the scale. So she did not expect me to be perfectly like freaking bouncing off the walls with joy when I walked out of her sessions, when I had arrived there in utter despair. Because if I was in utter despair, to get to the point that I could go to therapy, it took like an absolute act of God and, you know, sometimes actually somebody helping me to physically get dressed and driving me over there. So it would be completely irrational and frankly insane to want somebody in that situation to walk out there in a state of peace, grace, and joy, fulfillment, you know, contentment, any of these things. And so she didn't. She had no expectations of that. And this is why she was a safe place. And this is why I was able to keep going, because she consistently helped me to reach for just the emotion right above wherever I was, or maybe two or three up the ladder. And that was fine. And there wasn't this like, I think what people often struggle with is a sense of shame. Like, why am I still in this place? Why am I locked in wherever I'm locked? Why do I feel these feelings of being stuck? It's what's wrong with me for this? Or they're so trapped in a mindset of utter despair and hopelessness that they actually decide, you know, the only way through this is out of this world, and this is how suicide happens. So it's really important that we all learn the skills for ourselves, that there's always the choice to just go slightly up the ladder, slightly up the rungs of feeling better. Right? I think that to have that in our toolkit is so valuable for helping ourselves, helping our loved ones, children, the people we work with, just and the world, right? It's a really helpful thing to know that in every moment we have a choice. We have a choice that the next thought is maybe slightly more helpful or the next action is somehow helping us to move just slightly up that energetic or psychological or vibrational energy ladder. Whatever it is that you want to call it that, whatever means something to you, because it's real and it is tested across sort of disciplines, shall I say, scientific disciplines. And, you know, there is proof of this, regardless of whatever it is that you buy into. Okay, so I'm not I'm not apologetic about having a great belief in spirituality and believing that there is another realm and that, you know, and that that energy exists and that I feel it or whatever. But I am very much respectful of the fact that that's not everybody's reality and people don't resonate with that. And I'm unhelpful if I'm going to try force that on you. But I will say once again that, you know, that this is solid science in terms of a soft science. And I guess, you know, there could be other ways of proving it, whatever. But I just know that my doctor, my psychologist used this very, very effectively without naming it. Okay, so let me describe this more clearly. So what Abraham Hicks or what these women were referring to in this podcast as the lowest place, the lowest rung on psychologically that you could be, is in a state of fear, grief, desperation, despair, and powerlessness. And, you know, that's a pretty like wide range of things, because I have had a sense of powerlessness which felt marginally better, right, than utter despair. I have felt powerless when watching the news. I have felt powerless over sometimes my finances, or when you're waiting to hear if you got a job. I've really bought into that before and just felt this sense of like all of my power is in somebody else's hand and it sucks. I felt powerless as a child with an abusive parent in control of everything. And so it's a bad, sad feeling, but it's slightly less awful than utter despair when you can only see suicide as an option. But these are all in a very, very, very low range. And I know that we can all agree that none of us want to be in a state of fear, grief, desperation, despair, or powerlessness for a moment longer than we want to be. Right? So let me quickly read through all the other things. So the next one up from that is insecurity, guilt, and unworthiness. How many of us just sit there like day in and year out? How many of us sit in a state of insecurity, guilt, and unworthiness like as our default? That's really low. That is something that we should work on getting out of. The next one up, surprisingly to me, is jealousy. Jealousy is super toxic and it's really, really low. Now, she's got I don't know if I mentioned that this is a ladder from 1 to 22. So there's a lot above that. So if you're in a perpetual state of jealousy, you want to look at that and you want to say, okay, this is bringing me down in so many ways. It's making me physically feel a lot of emotions which are incredibly uncomfortable. Psychologically, it sucks. It's probably blocking me in every possible way, including my relationships, making me very unattractive. Stuff like that. So if you think that jealousy ain't no thing, it is a thing and it's a bad thing. And I know that because I've been really prone to jealousy, because the next one down from that is insecurity, guilt, and unworthiness. And I was really, really primed for that. I was actually conditioned, like actively conditioned as a child, to be in a state of guilt, unworthiness, and insecurity. So I spent a lot of time in a place of jealousy. And you know what? A lot of people feel shame for being jealous. And if your default below that was insecurity, guilt, and unworthiness, then give yourself a hand, because you've actually raised yourself up just that slight little bit into a better place with your jealousy. Jealousy is not a great place to be, and we should actively try to move out of it. But if you're jealous instead of utter despair, you've done well. You moved up, and that's good. It's something. You're feeling something, right? The next one up is hatred and rage. And I honestly do believe that rage has its place. An amazing person that I have quoted over and over again, who is a Holocaust survivor and has worked with neo-Nazis without them even knowing who she was, so tenderly and gently, and helped them so much to become better people and to free themselves of the psychological torment that they themselves were in. This is a really good evolved human being, has said that there's no forgiveness without rage. And so I do feel like rage has its place. And I often refer to what was my rage stage, when I came out of that sense of guilt and unworthiness and then from jealousy and, you know, jealous of my siblings and all that stuff who seemed to be getting better parenting than me, to rage. And rage was a real step up for me. And I was really glad to experience it. It was such a relief. But didn't want to live there for long because it was also harmful. It did affect some of my relationships. A lot of people could not hang with me in my rage stage. It was sorely uncomfortable for them. It brought them down, and I do not blame them, frankly. I mean, to hang with somebody who's perpetually in the state of rage is hard. Now, again, if you're in a place of desperation and powerlessness and fear and grief, and you've moved up to rage, then bully for you. I'm super happy for you, because I would rather see you angry than hopeless. I would rather see you raging than wanting to end it, because there was just nothing that you couldn't feel at all. I would rather see you there. Now, if you are stuck in the rage place, I'd encourage you to reach up the ladder for something else. And in that next moment, you can look for ways to reach up. And the next thing from hatred and rage is actually revenge. You know, when you're sort of quietly plotting cold revenge. Also not a very productive place to be, but it can be entertaining. It can be entertaining for a short period of time. What I want to tell you is that it is not helpful to add shame to whatever it is that you're feeling. Just recognize that it's not, you know, these emotions are still in the lower rungs. And so if you have to be there because it's keeping you from being in a yet lower one, fine. Then be there, but recognize that there's always something right above that maybe you could consider, maybe in 20 minutes or 2 minutes or 2 months, that you can consider reaching for something else. And they, Gabrielle Bernstein always said, you always have the next moment. There's always the next moment to make another choice, just to make another choice. Maybe you choose it, maybe you don't, but there is that option. So then from revenge, there's anger, which is just, you know, anger. This morning, I felt anger. I felt anger. I went on Facebook. I woke up. I'd had, and honestly, I moved up the rungs really well this morning, and I'm pretty proud of it. I'm pretty proud that I landed on anger, because I had a lot of dreams in the middle of the night that obviously were triggering some really dark stuff, because I woke up several times in the night. I'm not sure what the dreams were, but I woke up in a state of near a panic attack, which is really quite unusual for me now. I am kind of in a peaceful and fairly settled, sort of like predictable place. I'm not as like, oh my hell, I don't know how I'm going to feel 10 minutes from now every day, like I did dwell in for so many years. I do feel predictably pretty good, pretty stable. So this wasn't really great. I woke up this morning and I felt physically yuck and in a state of a lot of like, fear. I would say it was fear tinged with powerlessness, and my body felt physically bad because of it. I felt really dizzy. I felt energetically really, really drained, tired, like no desire to go and do anything active, which is my sort of default in the mornings. I tend to, you know, have some coffee and really want to do something active, do some exercise. I really didn't want to do that. I just felt bad. I was like, I kind of felt like I wondered if I was coming down with something. So then I moved on to, I meditated for a long time and kind of moved to a more stable sort of like flat place. And then I made the mistake of going onto Facebook when I was feeling pretty vulnerable, and I immediately moved to anger. I could have probably made better choices to move to another space, but anger wasn't bad compared to fear. You know, so there you go. I was feeling anger because, you know, some just a lot of stuff that I was seeing, some interactions I was having in a conversation I was having, I felt some yucky feelings. I just was feeling just yucky. And so then I made the choice to move beyond that, like just to, you know, close that, close Facebook, you know, in that, in the loop of that conversation and in my own mind, and move on. Okay. So then the next ones are discouragement, and then moving up, I'm not going to stop on every single one, blame. Above blame is worry. Then there's doubt. Then there's disappointment. Number 11 is overwhelmment, which I think we, a lot of people, particularly women, dwell in a state of overwhelm, like also as a default, which is pretty bad when you look at it, like compared to number one. 11 and one are quite far apart, but they're not, it's not terrible, but it's definitely something to consider. If you just default feel like you're overwhelmed, you know, just I'm overwhelmed. And that's how it is. I just live in a state of overwhelm, and you kind of just grit your teeth and just accept that you are an overwhelmed individual. It's definitely something to consider doing something about. And you don't have to change necessarily anything other than your mindset. In your next thought, you can go, well, will this matter in 5 years? Will it matter in 5 minutes? Will it matter in 5 hours? Am I overstimulated now? Is there something I can do to be less overstimulated? Could I turn off a radio? Could I close down Facebook? Could I get off social media? Could I put a pin in this conversation? Could I turn off the TV? Could I ask a child for a moment? And just go and take that moment and breathe really deeply. Could I, you know, do I have to do this particular activity? Maybe none of those options are there for you, and then you just have to take a deep breath and tell yourself it's going to be okay. But don't necessarily accept overwhelmment as like your state of being. If you do need to make some real lifestyle changes, it's worth it, because you don't want to hang out in number 11 for the rest of your life. Number 10 surprised me as being higher than number 11, because I always tend to think, well, overwhelm is better than being frustrated, irritated, or impatient. But number 10 is higher than overwhelm. And I guess it's because you can kind of like, you're not in the swirly space. You can almost focus that onto this particular thing is irritating, and you can identify it. And that's why I say, you know, sometimes you're like, I'm so overwhelmed, and it's so me, and it's all swirly and internal. And if you recognize that something is irritating you, it's vexatious to your soul, as they say, you could really identify that and end it. You know, turn off the TV, certainly log off of Facebook, maybe forever. Facebook, my word, that thing, that place is just becoming increasingly hard to find the light. I do find that I really like Instagram, though, just as a throwaway. If people are really dedicated to social media, I'm shifting more and more and more away from Facebook, because it's just so much noise and divisiveness. But I find a lot of joy, contentment, and inspiring stuff on Instagram. Really much easier to manage that sort of input. Then there's number 9 is pessimism. Do you find that you protect yourself by just kind of going for pessimism, going for the least happy outcome, because you just don't want to feel like let down? Would you rather feel let down, or would you rather just dwell in a really, you know, for a couple of moments or whatever, or would you rather just deal in what you consider is a safe place of pessimism, just expecting via, you know, the state of, you know, things to just be as bad as it can possibly be? That doesn't seem great, but it's, you know, it's a choice. If you want to move up from pessimism, apparently boredom is the next one. So boredom isn't particularly great. Boredom is still number 8, but it's still a damn sight better than 22. So if you can just move yourself out of like despair to boredom, you're great. You're doing pretty well. You know, there's nothing wrong with being bored from time to time. In fact, they say that for kids, it's really healthy. That state of boredom really triggers inventiveness and brain development, and you know, it's healthy for kids to be bored from time to time. So if you find yourself in a state of boredom and you have had worse feelings before, then you're like, well, good, look at me now, I've got to boredom. Where can I go from here that's up rather than down? And that's the important thing with boredom, I think. I think boredom can lead to self-destructive behaviors. If we sit with boredom too long, it's really easy to move down the ladder rather than up the ladder. So when I'm bored, and it happens, and you would be like, why though are you bored? Because you're a grown woman and you have 5 kids and you have responsibilities. It seems like you should have no reason to be bored. Sometimes I am, and I find that I have to manage that pretty carefully, that I don't want to sit in boredom too long, because I am quite apt to move down the rungs rather than up. So if you're aware that boredom is at number 8 and contentment is the next one up, how could you use what's around you to transfer boredom into contentment? What I've been doing in the last few months, well, I should say more the last month, is working on my environment, making it as happy and welcoming and peaceful and tidy and organized and good smelling and warm and nurturing as I can for both myself and my family, because I know that we're going to be spending a lot of time indoors. And so when I find that I'm bored in between projects or conversations or work, and I'm going to be apt to start looking out the window and complaining, or I'm going to go into like a lower vibration even than that, and getting really bitter and angry and jealous of other people who are in better climates, or picking fights because I'm bored, or whatever. I'm like, how can I be more content? What can I do? And I find that like watering a plant or feeding a plant or taking care of my home in some way, or making, beautifying my environment, helps me to feel a sense of peaceful contentment. And I have a small house. It's nothing fancy. I don't want to spend money. I have more than enough junk in my house that I'm trying to get rid of. And so I look for low cost ways to kind of improve the, what they call the hygge, I think, you know, HYGGE is the big kind of catchphrase for everything that makes your home more twinkly and warm and nice in winter. It's a Scandinavian term. And so I actively try to cultivate this feeling of by adding the fairy lights and dusting and cleaning and making live plants happier and being really, really grateful that I have these things and that I have this little home and that I have this roof over my head. And maybe, you know, I can't even afford to paint right now something, but I can certainly scrub that wall or that door and it's going to look a lot better, just by making sure that all the dingy grime is off, or I can make sure that my mirrors are clean or my windows are clean or whatever it is. So contentment is a good one, because I sit in boredom quite regularly, and that can really spiral quickly for me. All right. And then, you know, if you're prone to boredom, find, you know, maybe a shift in lifestyle that you're not going to find, you know, maybe make yourself busier, take on more projects, volunteer more, take on another job, take on more clients, whatever it is, so that you find you're not bored. But boredom, I might add, is still a lot better than overwhelm. So don't overdo it, you know? Be aware of that too. Okay, so then from contentment comes hopefulness. And I find that if I reach for something that will make me more content, I am immediately very, very easily able to reach up to hopefulness. And that's a wonderful feeling. I really like hopefulness. It's number 6. And hope is a lovely feeling. You know, like, look, this is not like the end of the world. Yes, winter here does actually last for 6 months or longer, whatever. But, you know, I've survived it before. And look, there might be hope for a trip, you know, to a sunnier place later on this winter. Or I'm going to start a new class doing something that's really exciting. And I'm excited and I'm hopeful about it. Or, you know, I'm going to write a blog post now that I really hope will help people's lives, because the thing I've learned has helped me so much, or whatever. And that transports you into number five, which is a state of optimism. And, you know, living in a place of optimism, a lot of good things stem from. We tend to think pessimism is safer, but it's not. Sitting in optimism and really kind of cultivating, and this is something new I've learned and that I'm really working on, that sitting in a place of optimism is perfectly safe. You're totally, totally entitled to sit in a place of, I am going to be fine and everything's going to be fine no matter what happens. That is a safe place to be. Things and people can go wrong. People can let you down, and actually you can count on the fact that they will, but you don't have to be pessimistic about it. There will always still be good friends. There will always still be people that have your back. You will always still be able to access great love. And there will always still be enough to keep you going and to make you okay, that you will be okay. So it's really safe to live in optimism. In fact, it's better. It's safer, in my opinion, emotionally. And clearly on the scale, it would indicate that it is emotionally safer to stay and cultivate optimism. And my granny Betty was the most optimistic person, and she also gave other people a lot of grace. If people were letting her down, she always attributed the highest possible reason as to why they may do that. And her catchphrase was, I'm sure there's a perfectly good explanation. I'm sure they have a very good reason for that. And she was an incredibly happy person. And she was also a very attractive person. People loved her. She attracted good people to her and good things for her. And she was very vibrant, loved life, and really lived it fully until she died. She's adored, and I miss her. And I still feel very, very close to her. And when I need a real boost, I kind of reach out for her, and I talk to her, and I try to channel her qualities. And the first one that comes to mind is just this optimism and this kindness and this cheer, like everything will turn out okay. And if you decide that, it tends to, because what you look at, the way you look at things changes things to be what, you know. Okay, I've really botched that beautiful expression. If you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And I think that's by Wayne Dyer. And I love that expression because it's true. If you look at the world as kind, and we talked about that, Seth and I talked about that, that Albert Einstein said, you know, the most important thing, most important decision a human being can make is the universe kind? Is the universe benevolent, friendly? I think he used the word friendly, or is it hostile? And if you decide that it's friendly, you will see the friendliness. You will see the kindness. You will see it in everything. The other day I was at Goodwill, and I decided actively to look for somebody who might need a lift while I was there. And I found this girl, and I didn't think that she, you know, she looked really put together. She was checking me out. She's really pretty. She was doing at the checkout counter, and not checking me out, looking at me. She was just checking out my goods. And she was really pretty, but she didn't look particularly happy. And she might've just had that kind of face, you know, where you just, my face kind of rests in a maybe not overjoyed state. You know, we all just have weird resting faces that don't necessarily indicate what's going on inside of us. But I just thought, well, just in case she's not happy, I'm going to make sure to tell her that I really think she's pretty. And I, you know, I like the way she puts herself together. And I did. And the moment that I did express that and be like, you know what, if I put myself together so carefully as she has, I would certainly not be offended if somebody told me that they thought I was pretty. It would make me feel good. And the moment I told her that, she did seem lifted, and she said, well, thank you. She didn't seem shocked or surprised or like nobody had ever told her that before, but she did seem happier. She seemed lighter. And then she said, can I, and she made sure that I could make it out to my car, and she held the door open. And I'm almost certain that would not have happened if I hadn't sort of engaged with her in that way. And then I was like, you know, when we're kind, kindness comes back, and that's okay. It's always going to be okay in that way. We're always going to find our way to being okay. All of us, no matter what happens in politics or the world, we're gonna find ourselves okay if we are kind and if we are good and we are generous and we assume the best of people and we also try to give the best to people. All right, and then from optimism comes number four. positive expectations or beliefs, which is just what I just covered. And then up from that becomes enthusiasm, eagerness, and happiness. And we are all drawn to somebody who is enthusiastic, right? And eager to help and eager to be of assistance and eager to just show you the best part of what the world has to offer and what they have to offer. And being eager is just, you know, let's not get it confused with the desperate kind of eagerness, but the peaceful eagerness, you know, that like, yes, I'm very happy to share with you. Like, I am so eager to share with whomever wants to listen about something that's really been helpful to me over the years without me even knowing how to, you know, quantify it or articulate it. And now I have a way, I have the vocabulary to talk about it. And I'm so happy to do that. And so that kind of eagerness, right? That's the kind of good eagerness that we all want to convey. And then number two is passion. And I think that overlaps too, because now you can see that I'm passionate about trying to reach out to people and help as many people as possible through it. And when you're engaged daily in your passion, I think you are really kind of living at a higher level. When you're doing something that you're passionate about and that fills you up and lights you up. And I've said to people when they're feeling so sad or whatever, and I've said, you know, can we talk about something that you're really passionate about? Can we talk about something that lights you up? Can you try and help somebody with something that you know for sure has been helpful to you? Can we like dwell in that for a minute to see if it makes you feel better? And I've never seen it not. Now that's a huge leap, right? That's a huge leap up the scale. And it's an option. It's a choice. Sometimes it needs guidance. The other day, I have to admit that I forgot to take medication. It's possible for 2 days in a row. I was aware the first day that I may or may not have taken it, and it's too much of a risk to double up. So the second day, what do you know? But I took it very late. So that was like 2 days worth, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. And I felt such a state of despair for like a couple of hours. And I had the wherewithal because of all the work that I've been doing, and that to know, okay, this is going to pass. And secondly, I'm going to do something that taps into my passion. I'm going to read about something that taps into my passion. First, I try to call a friend to laugh and to just be silly with. And then I sort of moved slightly up the ladder. But I have to say that when my husband was just trying to like, you know, just point out that the negative and the pessimistic things I was saying were false, it didn't help me at all. Like the things he was saying to me, the things he was pointing out are like, that's not true. That's not true. It's not true that everything's terrible and we're all going to die and you're going to die. And, you know, or whatever it was that I was spouting in that state of absolute, like, chemically triggered despair. I couldn't even hear it. What really did help me is to reach up myself and to pull myself up by focusing on things I was actually passionate about, by engaging with a friend, by helping myself up the ladder. And I did all sorts of different things to help myself out of that despair. I got angry for a minute. Then I, you know, I went and did something active. I tried to make my hair like look better. I did all sorts of things. And I was really proud of myself that even though by the end of that night, I actually had to skip a party because I felt so crap, I was still not in a place where I wanted to kill myself, which I have been before. And I was really proud of the fact that I was able to use different resources and sort of hop around that scale and try different things and know that my next thought also had another choice. And it had to come from inside. It was this inside job. I really did need it. And maybe if my husband had said, here, tell me about something you're enthusiastic about, or tell me about your passion, I would have like lashed out at the poor man even more. I don't know. But I do know that it really helped me to kind of read something that I was passionate about and to get distracted in that. And then finally, I know that you've all been patiently waiting for what number one is on the scale. And number one is joy, appreciation, empowerment, freedom, and love. When we're sitting in a state of love and appreciation, joy, we are naturally empowered. Our spirits are empowered. We don't have to wait for anybody else to empower us. We don't have to be in a state of, you know, we don't have to be leading the country. We don't have to be even the boss of our organization or of our division or of our home or whatever. We are empowered and we're free in our own minds. When you are joyful and when you are grateful for whatever it is that you have, and when you're really focused on gratitude and appreciation, and when you are living in a state of love, you are empowering yourself. And, you know, we have had a period of time, and I've talked to you ad nauseum over how dark it is here in Northwest Ohio and how my body and mind are not well built to cope with that. And we have had the longest period of darkness that exists, that has existed in this very dark place in 5 years. It's been that bad. It's been really particularly bad. And I have to say, because I was doing an exercise of trying to find joy and appreciation in every moment that week, it pretty much passed me by. I was surprised when somebody else pointed it out. I was like, well, what do you know? I had done my methods of dealing with seasonal affective disorder. I'd been pretty good about sitting in front of my lamp, exercising, you know, doing all the things that I know that combats the physical effects of seasonal affective disorder. But I was also making really conscious choices that when I made coffee in the morning, when I opened the coffee, I would hold it in my hand and I would look at the bag of coffee and I would think to myself, Kirsty, you have coffee in your house. And guess what? You're allowed to drink coffee now. And that's fantastic. And you can drink it without guilt. And it makes you feel so good. And coffee has been really good for your health. Isn't it wonderful? And then I'd just be like awash in appreciation before I'd even made the damn coffee. And then I'd look at the little bag of coffee and I'd go, Kirsty, oh my gosh, now you can think this is as silly and hokey as you need to think it is. And I don't care at all because it started my day on such a good note. I would look at the coffee bag and I'd see the handwritten note, you know, the handwritten words on it and be like, I just love that we have Grounds for Thought in our town. This little home, you know, this like family owned business that has done so well and is just really contributed so much to our community and all the kind people that I've met there, and how it feels like home there, and that it smells like coffee and old books, and that's the nicest, most nurturing smell I can think of. I'm so glad I have it. And then I'd open it up and see the dark roast in there, and I'd take a huge big huff of it and sniff it and feel so happy that I had really good coffee to drink, and it wasn't like yucky, watered-down McDonald's coffee that I used to get and drink on the sly in my minivan when I was still kind of a Mormon, or at least my family thought I was, and that I could freely make coffee in my own home. What a freaking blessing that is. And it was great coffee. It was good coffee, and it smelled amazing. And all of these wonderful feelings of freedom and appreciation and love empowered me and made me feel great that day. Before I'd even had one sip of this like nectar from the guards, I was feeling like an empowered person in charge of her own joy. And that's a really high vibration and a high energy level or a high psychological place to be. And it blesses your family and it blesses the people you encounter. And so when I go out into the world, I have the energy to lift up the girl who's checking me out at Goodwill. And I have the energy to be the best that I can be for the people that I coach. And I have the energy to be a really nice mom to my kid before I take her to school in the morning and start her day on a better footing. And the people that I train, you know, I'm good to them and I'm nicer to my husband and I'm hopefully more uplifting to my friends. And it is just like this wonderful ripple effect. And it all came because I was doing this very, very intentional and nitpicky almost exercise of joy, that I would find something to be joyful about every moment after opening my eyes until I was in that flow. You know, because I'd wake up often like feeling tired and being like, oh, perfect. Here's another gray day. Oh, but I'm alive. Oh, I'm breathing deeply. Oh, I'm in a bed that doesn't have rodents or fleas. It's comfortable also. And the bedding smells good. And I'm in a warm house. Holy crap. There is water coming out of my tap. It's warm. What is this? I can brush my teeth. Look at that. My teeth are healthy. They're not falling out of my head. Look at all this. I'm not in pain. I mean, the things that we can be joyful about if we really sit in the moment, like we talked about in our last episode with Seth, will actually really overwhelm you and empower you so that any circumstances, even living in Northwest Ohio when you're a South African girl, will not have the power to bring you down. You have the power to decide how happy and how healthy and influential you're going to be. And you don't have to go from that. And I don't want you to feel like I'm blithely saying, okay, if you're in a state of despair and you are struggling with PTSD or other very real states of depression, that I expect you to just be living in a state of appreciation and joy. But I am telling you that it's super damn helpful to do exercises like that and to slightly move up the rung and to decide in your mind that you actually have the option of maybe making the next moment a choice between feeling slightly better, not feeling great necessarily, but feeling just that slight bit better and reaching for that slightly higher rung. So I hope that this has been helpful to you, because it was really exciting for me to see what my therapist did using whatever like psychological model she was working with, or only her own instincts, whatever it is. It worked for me. It really worked for me, and it continues to work for me. And so I hope that this is helpful to you in maybe being able to be mindful and intentional about it in your own life, and to help the people that you love to do the same. You know, we never want to be preachy to each other, and we always want to respect whatever state people are in and allow them to feel safe with you if they're in that state, and hold space for them in that state. But if you yourself want to help yourself up to the next rung, these things are at your disposal. And I really can attest to the fact that they have helped me. I hope this podcast was helpful to you. If you have thoughts or comments, please let me know. I love feedback. I live for feedback, and it helps me to be better. Even if it's negative, let me have it. If you do want to get this podcast out to more people, I would super appreciate it. If you found it helpful, share it with someone else. Let other people on social media know, share the link. If you want to like it and rate it highly, on iTunes, that is another way that more people get to see it. If you have negative feelings about it, by all means, come to me with them. I don't necessarily think it's awesome to just stick it on iTunes and say, this sucks, one star, goodbye. I would really appreciate constructive criticism, though, if you have it personally. So I think I've said all that I have to say. Have a wonderful day and week. If you are in a low place, I love you. I send you all the energy. I know it's tough. I know it's hard. It sucks. I've been there. I might be there again in 5 minutes, but I do have faith that we can all climb our way out of it. It's there for us, and we have each other's backs. And the universe, as Gabrielle Bernstein would say, has your back. I know that. I believe that. I feel it in my heart. There's a lot of help out there, and the universe itself is friendly. Take care. You are very, very much loved. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.